Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Want to welcome everybody back this evening. This is Rob Russell with Sites by Rob, Wildlife Pro Network. We're getting together, going to talk about professional bee removal this evening. And before we go into that, about a year ago, Rob Overton was with us, and we did a similar podcast on bee removal. And back then, we weren't really realizing that Rob was beginning to get sick. We had lost him as our beekeeping podcast guy. But this evening, Rob is back, and I just want to just have an opportunity to say, Rob, I'm kind of glad to hear your voice again. How you doing?
Oh, I'm here. I'm glad to be back. This is a topic that's near and dear to me, so I tried my best and rested up so I could be here tonight.
Well, I'm glad you're strong enough tonight to be with us. I mean, like I said, to talk about the Bushkill BVAC system without you there, it just doesn't feel right. So how you doing health-wise? I mean, a lot of people may not even know what happened to you, Rob. You just kind of, you did kind of just drop out of thing, and it's, you know, with good reason.
Well, I've been diagnosed finally with chronic Lyme. I mean, I went through, it's about a year now, I started getting, you know, pain, back pains and neck pains and stuff, and I just assumed it was, just overdoing it, cutting wood, shoveling snow or whatever. And then about a year ago, I was out middle of a storm, and my vision went and was fogginess, and I couldn't, you know, and it was like that really set me back. So I went to the doctor and said, "What's the deal?" And they thought I had a virus, and you know, tried to go through that. And a couple weeks, I started feeling better, and then the pains and stuff came back. And back to the doctor I went, and then you know, they finally said, "Well, it sounds like you might have Lyme. We'll send you for the test. Let's get you started on antibiotics." So they started me on that. I went for the test. The test came back negative. In fact, that was around the same time I was down there last year in Florida and saw you, Rob. I was on the antibiotics, and I ran 28 days on oral antibiotics, and I kind of felt a little bit better. And about 6 weeks later, it just all came crashing down again. And then my primary doctor, you know, said, "I don't want to keep prescribing antibiotics unless we can figure out what this is." So he sent me to an infectious disease doctor who took 18 vials of blood and 38 tests, and everything came back, you know, perfectly fine, you know. So then he sent me off to the ophthalmologist. I went to see the ophthalmologist, and he said, "Your vision, it's not, you know, it's neurological because it's in both eyes, and your eyes, nothing has changed in your eyes in the last 10 years. So then I went off to a neurologist, and they sent me for a bunch of, you know, brain spec scans and all this other tests, and basically, you know, said, "No, everything looks fine." And by that point, I was just getting, you know, very frustrated when you just, you know, having all kinds of issues, and, you know, I couldn't do anything. I was in such pain, and everybody's telling you it's fine. So I actually, you know, did some research on the internet and found what they call a Lyme literate doctor. And August, I started traveling 2 hours to Jersey to see this guy. And, you know, he put me on heavy doses of double antibiotics for 6 weeks oral. And then after that, I'm on my 10th week of antibiotics intravenously. And after that, I'm going back to oral for a while and once a week shot. But since Christmas time, I feel like I'm improving. I'm a little bit hesitant to say that because it's very cyclic. It's in a, you know, it's usually in a 4 week cycle, and you'll feel good, and then it'll hit you again. But so far, I'm about 7-8 weeks without a major hit. So I'm hoping. So, you know, that's it in a nutshell, I guess. I mean, the Lyme disease is very very controversial to some extent. The insurance companies, you know, don't want to pay for a lot of the heavy antibiotics for long periods of time. And if they've got the medical industry and the people that write these procedures basically in their pocket. And so to find a doctor that'll diagnose you with clinic or with Sorry, that's one of the problems too, is my short-term memory disappears, or I'll be in the middle of a discussion and forget what I was saying. But to have someone diagnose you with chronic Lyme, it takes you got to have a doctor that's willing to do that, and it's tough. So anyway, that's about where I stand now, and enough talking about me. Let's move on and talk about bee removals.
Yeah. So anything new to tell me about your BVAC system? Anything, anybody who's never heard of it before, and this might be their first exposure, tell me a little bit about why you set that system up.
Basically, I had been doing bee removal for years, and a lot of my bee removals, I travel, I know everybody thinks of New York as New York City, but I'm what they call upstate, even though I'm only about halfway up, but it's pretty rural areas, and I travel. Most of my bee removals are an hour or further away, so I don't have the option of going and doing the cutout and leaving the hive there and letting them migrate to the hive and then go back the next day and pick up the hive. So when I go to do removal, it's a one shot deal, and that's where the BVAC comes in handy. And I was using the traditional, screen cage in a box type BVAC, and I was not very happy with the fact that, it worked well. You got them in the box, but then to get them out of the box and into a hive, you had to, bang them or dump them again, and the box sizes don't line up, and, it's just very stressful on the bees. So that's when I got the idea, why not come up with a vac that actually just, sucks them once and puts them right into the hive. So that's basically what the design of my vac is. It's a bottom board with a vacuum port that goes in the bottom, and then you put a hive body or two depending on the size of it, and then there's a top cover that either has a vacuum port on, or I modified mine. I had a shop vac that had the removable motor to be used as like a leaf blower, so I mounted that right on the top. And the reason I suck them in from the bottom is when anybody that's done a removal knows that it's next to impossible not to suck up, some dead bees or debris. And that was another drawback of the traditional one. You dump what you sucked up on top of the hive, and you got all this debris and garbage, dumping down through your hive. With this, suck them in the bottom, I close them up, take them home. And a lot of times it's dark or late by the time I get home. I just open up that port on the bottom where the vacuum hose was, and that's an entrance, and, let them sit a day or two. And they'll use that, and then it's easy just to pick up the hive body, slide out the bottom part of the vac, and put a bottom board and set it right back down, so you're not even disturbing them when you take the vacuum attachment out. I don't know, last time we talked about it, whether I had the cutout, what I call the cutout shim, but basically when I do a removal, I'll cut the brood and I'll put it into cutout frames, or, some people use rubber bands or strings. I prefer the cutout frames with the wire on both sides and just like a book that you put it in. I'll take that brood and I'll put it in a styrofoam nuke as I'm cutting it out. And, I try to locate the queen up in the vac. I'll take her and put her in a cage. So with the cutout shim is basically when I assemble the bee vac, I'll use two deep supers, and I'll put this shim between the two that has number 8 hardware cloth. So basically you suck all the bees into the bottom deep below that screen, and then when I'm done with the job, I can take the top of the vac off. That screen prevents the bees coming up, and then I can take the brood and queen and put those frames and the queen in the top deep, put the cover back on the vac, and then pull out that screen and the shim, and then all the bees that I sucked up will migrate right back to the brood and the queen. So, you don't have to worry about when you get home putting the queen back in, or as you're doing it, open it up and losing bees. It keeps everything isolated until you're ready to remerge them. I find it pretty well.
Rob, this is Reginald in Tulsa. Just real quick here, because it's already piqued interest. I use I'll just tell you right up front. I used Nguyen's feedback that I got from Brushy Mountain, and we're all for improvement efficiency. So if you can give your website name, so
sure,
people can go and see what you have.
Yeah, my bee removal website is bushkillfarms.com. I'll have to put a link out there because originally when I designed this, you know, it was for my own use, and I put pictures and stuff out there so people could build them. There's a lot of interest in people that either don't have the skills or the time to build them, and I haven't been advertising it too much. I have been building a few of them, but I've been working on being able to produce more of them. So I will have a batch ready in a couple weeks. So I will put a link out on my on bushkillfarm.com. But if you want to see the back, you can just it's Robo R-O-B-O dot bushkillfarms bushkillfarms.com, and that's my personal blog site. And over on the right side, you'll see Bushkill BVAC, and you can click on there, and there's all the pictures and a lot of feedback that I've gotten from people that use them. But I will, within the next day or two, I will put a link at my Bushkill Farms business site over to the blog as well. And in fact, I think if you just go to Google and search on Bushkill BVAC, it'll probably come up.
Okay. And the other...
Yeah.
The other, and I don't mean, believe it or not, I don't mean what I'm fixing to say to be disrespectful by any means, but it would rob for website improvement. And the reason I say that is you're in New York, aren't you?
Yes.
Hey, Reg? Reg?
Yeah?
You don't have to go there with that. It's cool.
Okay, he's taken care of.
Yeah. I think he wanted me to make an improvement to your site, Rob. That's all.
Oh, okay.
No, it's last year we got 8 calls from New York to come and remove honeybees because they couldn't find anybody.
Oh, yeah.
In New York to do it, and we're all the way over here in Tulsa, and we tried.
I've got honeybeeremovals.com, and when Rob is ready, I'll have them on the site, but I don't think you're really ready for a lot of work right now, are you, Rob?
Yeah, I've been last year or so. I've been picking and choosing. I mean, it's been tough with my health, and you know, it's a hobby for me, so it's I don't like to commit to something that I can't stand up and do. So, I haven't been promoting my business too much, put it that way.
Yeah, and I don't think Reg knew that either. Did
you?
No,
I didn't. No, I didn't know that. And I apologize.
You guys talked to each other before. Rob used to do all the podcasts. Remember we were going to do the handoff from Bob Evans? And then Rob began doing a bunch of podcasts. You guys have talked plenty of times.
We've talked, but I don't. You know how I am. That's why I said to get in touch with you.
I appreciate the plug, Reg.
Rob, we've got Craig on the line, too. But you're getting great reviews from what I'm seeing on your blog. And I'm just curious, because I'm sure everybody's going to say, what did Reggie ask? Because they know that he will. What did your unit cost?
I've been selling it's a unique piece. I mean, I don't sell the complete kit. Basically, I've been selling, I don't know if you've seen a picture, but it's the bottom piece, and you provide your own supers and your vacuum and all that stuff. I've been getting $75 for the three pieces. I can say that there's been a lot of questions about, they like the blower vac mounted right on top, and I have a Dirt Devil 5.5 horse that I've been using. I've had probably 15 years, and you no longer can buy it. What I'm in the process of working on is I have a prototype going right now. Homo sells a 16-gallon vac that has a removable blower. I am working on a pattern for a mount for that. So that'll be coming available too, and you know, that allows me to, you know, sell the back, and you can procure, I mean, sell my pieces and not have to go out and, you know, it allows people to either have a vac or they can go get a vac that'll fit. If you don't mind carrying your whole vac with you, you can just hose into the top and hose out the bottom. But I find that to be, especially when you're, you know, if you're doing one or two a year, it's one thing. If you're doing, you know, one a week, it becomes kind of cumbersome dragging a vacuum around to hook up to this thing. And, you know, I know a lot of people like a smaller vac so they can, you know, carry it up the ladder and stuff with them. But if you, I've done, you know, quite a few high ones where I can go 25. Well, I think the 2.5 inches comes in 8 flexions. I've done 3 sections, so 24 feet up with just the hose. But it requires, you know, a good size vac. I've had people that say I use a 5.5 horse. I recommend people when they ask me, go with the biggest vac you can, because in the top of the design there's a bypass so you can regulate the suction that actually goes through the hose to the bees, and that's critical with any BVAC. You'll hear a lot of people that say, oh, BVACs, you know, they kill the bees and this, and that's just because the vacuum is not regulated correctly. I mean, I've got that down now when I do. Is there a question?
No, I was just going to say I'm glad you brought that up, because I was just fixing to ask how to regulate, because my Owens has got, you know, the regulators on it, and it's a fine line between, with the one that I use now, is a fine line between destroying the bees and tearing them apart and actually sucking them off and not scraping them off and getting honey and everything else, because it's just too open-ended. So it was there for a minute, like I said, it was sounding like you hook a vacuum. I'm glad you put that in there that you can regulate it.
Yeah, because I always try to set it that you want just enough suction to suck them up. But you know, when they're festooning or in a clump, you know, I use the tool to help break them loose because they got pretty good grip. When they're on comb, you know, it's a little bit easier. You can suck them right off. But yeah, that's the biggest thing, and I always recommend the biggest horsepower you get, because that allows you to be able to go with longer distance hose. Versus, you know, I've had some guys that say, oh, I got it, you know, I've used it, you know, with a one horse, and, you know, that's great. But then you got to make sure, see, with my design, it's three pieces, and depending on your hardware, your V boxes, how well and stuff they are. I mean, you can have air leaks, whereas with a 5.5 or larger horsepower, those little air leaks you can compensate for with the extra suction you have. I mean, there's always, you can wrap it in duct tape and seams around, and then a lot of the guys, you know, that have the smaller vacs, I recommend that. The other thing is hose size. Any questions on that? Otherwise, I'll move on to the hose size.
No, I was just wondering, personally speaking, if you had a flapper valve in it or of some type to stop them from traversing back up through the hose when you turn it off.
No, I don't. Usually, minimally I run 2 sections, which is 16 feet. And unless you leave it for an extended period of time, they're not going to come out out the hose. And if I do have to leave for an extended period of time, I'll just shove a paper towel or rag or something in the end of the hose. But having them coming back out is usually not an issue.
Okay.
That's speaking too, because I use black hose. Now, if you're using a clear hose, they see the light. I mean, that's a different story. You'll see a lot of people too that are hung up on, oh, you got to use smooth bore holes. Don't use a hose. Don't use corrugated. I have mixed feelings. Not mixed feelings. I have a different approach to that. I use the 2.5 inch shop vac hose, and even though it looks pretty rigid on the outside, the inside corrugation is nowhere near what the outside is. It's actually quite smooth. But my theory behind it is the bigger the diameter, the less the bee is going to be in contact with the wall as it goes through the hose. I mean, simple analogy is if you're running as fast as you can down a 2-foot-wide hallway, you're going to hit the walls more often than if you're running down a 4-foot-wide hallway. And, you know, and back is there a question?
No, I think it was some typing in the background, but I have a question, efficiency question. I know what it means to me, but a lot of people that are going to listen or don't have a chance to call in, I know what it means to them as far as efficiency goes. How much more efficient is it using your BVAC? Okay, you're going to go to a house that's going to require a cutout, and you're pressed for time. You don't have a cutout. Let's say it's a 10 combs on average. Time-wise, how much more efficient is it for you to use your BVAC than it is to go up and try to open and cut and harvest and maintain and move and with all the bees flying around and everything? What kind of time frame are you, how much more time are you cutting off of the job by using your BVAC, I guess, is what I'm asking for folks.
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you a definitive answer. I can say normally, and I don't rush it because it's a hobby for me. I'm usually 3 hours and I'm out of there and I don't have to go back. Some are shorter, some are longer. I did one last summer, three stories up on a scaffolding, and it was one of the deals. It was an apartment complex. They did not want to go in, through the ceiling. And they own the building, they maintain the building, and I had to go through a brick facade and then go through three 2x12s to get to the next. And by the time I got through all that, I was just glad that, I had the BVAC and I could just suck them and cut them out and go. I mean, a lot of guys, I know there's a gentleman on BeeMaster Forum that does, he does bee removals. Yeah, probably 2 or 3 a week, and he does them all by hand without a BVAC, and he cuts them out and stuff. But it's just so much easier, especially when you get a big one. Once you suck up a bee, they're not coming back to that area. When you're doing cutouts and you're trying to sweep the bees into a hive or something, some of those field they're gonna keep coming back to where they think their nest is, and it's just overwhelming. Whereas if you can just as I'm going, as they keep festooning down the bottom, I'll just keep sucking them as I take the next piece. And by the time I get down to a third of the hive left, I'll say 70% of the bees are in the BVAC. So it's just the closer you get to the end, the quicker it goes. I don't know if that answers your question. I'm trying to, BVAC is the ideal situation to use, or it makes the job quicker. It works for me because I can't make a second trip back to the most of these places. And I'm sure, yourself included, if you can go and do a job in one visit, it's better for you as well.
Well, I'll put it in my own experience in a way that people can understand. I use for those that don't know what an Owens BVAC is, it's more or less a fish trap inside of a plastic bucket with a vacuum top on it. Okay, so it's a three-stage. And then you have to take it apart and transfer the bees to the hive after transport. But I did a soppin hive a few years ago, 5 cells. Took me 2 days to do it. I didn't have a BVAC. This past summer, I did one 3 times the size with the BVAC, and it took less than a day. So that's the difference in having a BVAC and not having a BVAC. Now, when I speak in terms of we're always looking for the more efficient, I think the Owens is going to collect dust, and we're going to get one of your systems because aside from transporting and everything, I'd a whole lot rather just be able to take the vacuum off of a hive and go ahead and stack it in place as opposed to try to dump everything, dead bees, legs, wax, whatever else and all, into a hive after transport. Because that usually takes another 2 hours of cleaning the vacuum up and getting everything situated. And so, your system sounds like a... You heard a win-win, and then you heard win-win with a bonus. Yours sounds like a win-win with a bonus.
Yeah, and the other thing is, if you get a huge hive, I mean, Have you had instances where you know your own's got filled and you've had to empty it and get another put another basket inside and stuff? With mine, I mean, if you go in and you see, oh man, this is a huge one, you can stack three supers on it before you even start, you know?
Yeah, and that is, you know, that is just an outright advantage of having yours over the old ones. First, it's it looks like it's cheaper in cost. The second is you're absolutely right. I mean, even though with the old ones, it took me, you know, a day to do a job twice the size of the previous. There was a lot of stopping and opening and dumping, and those bees are going to, some of the bees are going to escape and fly back up there, so you're having to re-vacuum and re-traumatize the same bees two or three times over and over again to get them in the hive if you don't kill them with it. So your system is just, it amazes me the revolutions that our industry's taken and technology and stuff, and the members of our industries are, you know, in each aspect. And they seem to all be coming around in the past 5 years or so.
Well, there's a lot of people getting into beekeeping in the last 5 years, and, you know, and with people comes different thoughts and innovations. I mean, if you go back 5 years ago and all beekeepers were, generation after generation, or they were very, you know, older in life, and they were set in their ways, and, you know, a bee vac was, what the heck is that thing for? You don't need that fancy contraption like that. So it's good that we're getting, you know, it's good that the beekeeping has brought a lot of new minds in.
I know there's got to be some other people that are listening online with questions besides myself.
Well,
yeah, Rick.
We've got Craig online. We've got Leon online. I know we've got David McLeod online. We've got a lot of guys online.
Yeah.
Craig. This is Craig. I actually have a quick question. I don't know if I missed it or not because I got on just a little bit late, but I was wondering, with your BVAC design, do you have sort of a cushion backboard to where when the bees come in, they hit against that, or is that an issue at all?
No, actually, the bottom is sloped. I mean, when I originally designed it, I said, well, if I could slope, the idea was to get the bees, once they're in the vac, to get them out of the actual air circulation, because I'm drawing from top to bottom. So if I could get them to the back of the hive, they would be out of that. So when I originally designed it, the floor is actually slanted. It's flush with the front, that flush with the bottom. And then the back, it rises up to 3/8 of an inch from the back. But in reality, you got the suction at a just enough to get them to come through the hose. When they come from that 2.5 inch diameter into that, you know, box that's 20 by 16 1/4, the airflow just like drops them right in the hive. As soon as they come into the hive through the out of the hose, the airflow just diminishes drastically, and they just, you know, drop right there, and then they can progress up. So it's not like if you have your vacuum set right, I mean, if you're going full bore vac, I mean, and you're slamming them like rocks into the back of the hive, the cushion's not going to help. I have had some people that put cushions and stuff in there, but I don't think it's needed. If you have your vacuum set right, I mean, it's not uncommon for me to come home after a cutout and have maybe 25, 50 dead bees on the bottom. And a lot of that is my own doing, because anybody that's, you know, when you're cutting comb and stuff, and even though you've sucked most of the bees off, you're still gonna kill a few manually, and you know, you're gonna suck them up along with other debris that you set the hose down or it falls out of your hand. You're always picking up some dead bees. So, and the other drawback, I mean, I've had somebody suggest, you know, maybe a piece of carpet and stuff, but anybody that's got into these big removals towards the end of the season, it's next to impossible not to suck up, you know, some bees that have honey and stuff on them and the debris. It's just going to make a mess in the bottom of the, bottom of the bee vac.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like that's a problem with your design. I've seen some other ones out there, too, that where the actual an external vacuum cleaner is hooked to the box, and then right at that port they'll use a vegetable strainer or a colander or something like that to keep the bees from getting pinned to the opening where the actual vacuum cleaner motor is sucking air out of the main chamber. So how do you deal with that?
Once again, it's a matter of surface area, because where my vacuum is on top, the box is 3 inches. There's a 3-inch gap between the where the vacuum suction is and number 8 hardware cloth. That's the 16 1/4 by 20. So once again, you don't have, you know, they can walk on the bottom of the screen with the vacuum running, and there's not enough suction even with the vac fully open to, you know, try and pull them through the screen, because you're splitting that vacuum, that airflow across the big surface area.
Oh, okay. Wow. Great design. Thanks.
Yes, this is David McLeod in Atlanta. I've seen your design on the internet, and it's been my intention for a while to build me one. But the thing I'm running into is on the hoses from the vac up, what did you use to get your length? Some of these cutouts are pretty high up there, and my thing is connecting hose to hose to hose without creating a bunch of obstacles or bumps in the line, if you will, that these things will slam against as they go. How do you get your length?
I use the 2.5-inch shop vac hose that comes in 8-foot sections, and I'll couple up. I can, with my back, I go with 3 of them, which gives me 25 feet. Much more than that, you'll be on scaffolding or something, and then I usually put the, you know, bring it up close to that. You get much more than 25 feet, and I don't think, you know, it's perhaps isn't the right thing to be using then.
Okay, so you lose airflow that far out, and dropping down to 2-inch wouldn't improve it, so you just bring the back itself up.
Yeah, 25 feet is about as far as I can go on. Even if I put, I do have a, I don't know if it's 1.5-inch or whatever pool size hose. I have a 25-foot section of that pool hose. And I find the problem with the smaller diameter, especially I tried that for swarms with a pole when it's up in a tree, and the smaller diameter, you tend to get clogged with bees. You'll get a clump of bees that are, you know, all hooked together with their feet, and on the bottom of the hose. Whereas the 2.5, if you have your suction set too low, you can run into that, but it's usually not an issue with the 2.5 as it is with the 1.5-inch, and even the 1.5-inch with my 5.5-horsepower vac, it's just too much resistance over 25 feet. In fact, it whistles, sucking for air so much, and I don't think I could even go much further with smaller diameter hose than the 25 feet.
Okay. Next question: inside the hive itself, you just put empty frames in there for them to draw on when you set it off, or do you put a drawing column, maybe a little bit of water in there to keep them cool in the heat?
Yeah, so
you
on
put
a,
inside.
Yeah, so that's a great point. It's a hot day. I do take the comb. I tend to try to get them drawn comb. If you have it, it just makes it easier for them to get it, you know, going again. If you don't, you know, foundation is fine. But I usually put the bottom box. I usually put frames, and like you say, if it's a hot day, I actually take one or two frames and I'll pour water in them so they can cool themselves if necessary. And then the top, my normal setup is a bottom deep with frames, what I call the cutout shim, and then a second deep that's empty, and then the top of the vac. And then I'll when I do the cutout, I'll cut out the brood and stuff, and I'll just set that in a styrofoam nuke until I'm done, and then I'll put those frames in the top before I take it home. And I'll space, you know, I'll put the whatever brood I have, I'll put that in the center, and I'll fill out the rest with empty frames, and then I'll put the top of the vac back on and yank out the cutout shim and let the bees that I've sucked up, you know, migrate up.
Good question.
Okay.
This is Dave Schmidt.
in the St. Louis area, and I have a very a basic big shop vac system for drawing bees. I've never used it, and if I sell it, I don't know you know what the resistance is. Apparently, the people in St. Louis are a whole lot cheaper than in other areas of the country. I don't know. How does this sell versus, you know, chemical lethal control?
Rob or somebody else going to take that because I don't, you know.
I can.
Okay.
I'll field it. It's real simple. And here's how you approach it. With the problem that we have faced by hive beetles, the problems that we have faced with moths, and one of the huge problems of colony collapse disorder, if we don't do everything green, and we do things as we can have continued to do in the past, if we don't start going green on everything, mechanical means only, then we're going to be out of honeybees, and everybody will be eating gruel. If they can eat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without the honeybees, believe it or not, without the honeybees, we're not going to have a lot of the life-saving medicines we have. We're not going to have any of the food we're accustomed to eating. No vegetables, no fruits. We're not going to have them. So, you don't sell. And besides that, you know, even the pest applicators that I know that we work with, they don't know. They're not doctors. They're not physicians. They have no idea what problems the pesticides are going to cause for people other than what's written on the package. Now, I use my wife as an example. She has what's called a contact dermatitis. She can smell a certain chemical, and it'll swell her respiratory system shut. Well, I won't take the chance, and I won't take the chance with any of the clients. So the clients, I tell them, if you want them sprayed, save yourself money, go down to the hardware store and get some wall spray and spray them. We're not doing it. But, you know, you don't have a choice. You either hire us or you're not hiring us, but we're not putting chemicals or pesticides down, period. We're not going to do it, especially the honeybees.
Yeah, well, I agree with that. I know there's big problems with bees, in at least the United States, and the loss of numbers. But, I mean, the customers just seem interested. I want to be able to sell this. I want to be able to use a really good, high-quality system.
Well, I do what Leon taught me to do, and Leon's on here. He's listening. Leon don't say a lot unless he's really got a question about something. Otherwise, he just listens. But Leon's on here, and Leon's the one that turned me on to this. Go do a removal. Go do a cutout, or you do a, you know, remove a swarm, whatever it may be. But you don't poison them. You hive them up, you keep them. And then you put your name and label and logo on the jar when you rob them the next spring and send that back to the client that you got them from. So what we do when we remove them, we put the swarms or the colonies we remove into their own individual hive, and we actually write the client's name on top of the hive box so we know who it came from. So when we rob that, we know who that first jar goes back to, and it surprises them. And it's a real pleasant surprise. They have no idea that they're getting honey from their hive, which is what it boiled down to. It's a huge surprise. And we have gotten, we've literally gotten referrals for other bee removal jobs because they're eating our honey, or they're eating their honey with our logo on it. And they remember, oh, well, you know, I got a friend down the road. Here's the guy that came. He sent me a jar of honey. Here's his number.
Yeah.
But you don't give people a choice when it comes to poisoning, you know, poisoning bees. You know, you want me to poison the bees? You might as well just line your family and your children up in front of me and let me shoot them, because that's what you're doing to everybody, killing them.
Uh-huh.
You lose the bees. If we lose bees, we're going to lose humanity, period.
Well, Rich, I don't know about other markets here in Atlanta. a lot of the customers actually ask about live removal. They're aware of the colony collapse. Maybe it's faded some in the news, but people are aware that there's a problem with the bees out there. Actually, what I see, the ones more guilty of poisoning bees here in Atlanta are us and not the pest controls. Most of the pest controls I walk into say, we won't even fool with bees. We won't touch them.
Mm-hmm.
And they send it out to a NUCO, not realizing that that NUCO also has his HPC license, and he goes in there, hoses them, and does the cutout.
Yeah. People are becoming more aware, but for those that aren't aware, you just educate them, and you don't give them a choice.
Exactly.
You get called, you show up on the job, you're the professional, that's the reason they called you. If it's something they could do on their own, they'd have never called you in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So when you show up, you give them your professional opinion, you give them a professional estimate, you do a professional service for them, and you do not give them a choice.
Uh-huh.
You know, because if you do, that's the same thing as going, well, here's your choice. I can do this for $1,500 or I can do it for nothing. Which would you choose?
Mm-hmm.
Or do, you know, a lockout for squirrels or a chase out like the PCOs do.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I have people who, you know, they don't want they don't want to harm their squirrels, and I'll live trap them. I almost always live trap raccoons, but they're scared to death. You know, singing insects rank right up there with bats and snakes. They're scared to death of them. They want to
Leon. Leon, what about you? Now I know Leon doesn't spray anything, but do you give them a choice? I mean, other than Would you be willing to spray honeybees?
No, I don't give them a choice. I don't give them a choice at all. I go in there and we'll remove them and from anywhere from 800 to 5,000, and I'll go in there and remove them, and I give them a jar of honey every year. I mean, I've got clients that I've give jars of honey every year, and I tell you what, that quart of honey they get every year, any of their friends or whatever, that quart of honey seems like it's worth it to them to get it every year, because then they tell their friends and they tell their friends. And I've done 4 bee jobs on the same block, and the very least of them was $2,500, and they just giving that honey back to them is the best seller. But no, I don't give them a choice. They're either gonna do it my way and pay my price, or I'm gonna go on down the road.
Good.
This late summer, I'll tell you, this late summer, I drove about 3 or 4 hours to go do bees, and showed up, and they asked me where my cans were, and I asked them, I said, what cans? They said, the cans you're going to spray the bees with, whatever you use. And I said, I explained to you on the phone that we don't use pesticides. We're not a chemical application company. Everything's mechanical. We will remove and keep the bees. No, we want them dead. You know what? I wasted 3 hours of my trip, 6 hours out of my day, but that's fine. I'll waste 6 hours in a day and be happy with the fact that I didn't do what they wanted me to do and destroy the bees, as opposed to bending my standards or morals to suit a client just to get a job. I won't do it. Leon taught me that. Learn, you know, don't be afraid to say no to the ignorant that refuse education.
Yeah, good point. So, Leon, did that price include comb removal? Do you guys include comb removal with every job?
Yeah, I take the comb out, but I don't repair anything. I usually do a trap out. I try to sell a trap out to them, and then, you know, you can do comb removal, but I do the removal, but I don't repair anything. I have them sign a contract before I go in there and do it. I go rip out whatever needs to be ripped out and clean it up and go on my way, and then they can get somebody to fix it.
Okay, well, I'm way below you guys in terms of sophistication here. So I got to know, what is a trap out?
It's where you go in there and you're dealing with this million-dollar place that's got brick on the outside, and they're not going to allow you to cut nothing out or anything in their wall. So you go in there and you take a small nuke with like a queen and maybe 200 bees, and you set it up there, and you make put a cone over the hole where they're coming out, and you put that hive up there right there close to where the bees are coming out, and they'll come out that cone, but they can't go back in it, and they'll adapt to that nuke. You just remove the bees from the wall into your nuke.
Okay. So, yeah, I've used a cone before. I've made it out of just plain old window screen. I guess I didn't make the hole small enough because it looked like they were crawling back in.
Yeah, you got to make it. You got to make it a quarter of an inch. You want to make it a quarter of an inch opening, and then sometimes you got to, you know, you need to check it because sometimes your drones will get stuck or die, and you got to dig them out. And but you don't want it any bigger than a quarter of an inch.
Leon told me that as well, and what I'll do when I form my cone, I'll make it about 3 or 4 feet long. Because they'll go back to the entrance on the instead of down at the end, but I'll form it around a pencil.
Oh, okay.
That's the way. That's the best way to do it. Is a pencil is the perfect size.
I just done the break in here. I just put a how-to link up on the message for those on the computer version here. You can we have a whole big section in the forum about trap outs. The main drawback of a trap out is it's time consuming, right? I mean, you're talking weeks versus a day. So some customers,
right.
I mean,
that's why it varies from 800 to 5,000. I mean,
Leon's got a broader range than I do. I've only done one trap out, but I've been fortunate that I've only had one house that was, half side, three quarter side rock, and he wouldn't let me tear it off. Now, what we did do was open a portion of it and remove the honey and comb and beads that we could remove, and we removed about 200 pounds. What was left was what I approximated to be anywhere from 600 to 800 pounds. I just couldn't get my long arms in there any further to get the rest of it, so we did a trap out. But most all of them that we've come to, well, all of them other than that one that we've come to, we've been able to cut out. Now, the difference between Leon and ourselves, and we're fixing to go the way Leon does, and that's no repair. We'll cut it open. You sign this because you're going to have somebody else come in and repair it because we actually, right now, we do the repair work.
The only problem about the reason I don't do the repair work is because if you have them sign that contract that you're going to tear this out or you're going to do this or do that, and then when you go back to repairing and you say you're going to repair, you get a hold of some of them customers that ain't nothing ever going to be done right. If you go in there and tear it out, you know, that's fine. I mean, that's done the best, the easiest to your ability. But when it comes back to repairing, you're liable to make 20 trips over there making that customer happy. And
exactly.
And I don't want to deal with that because all these people have handymans. They have people that, you know, it's usually the upper class, middle to upper class that hire you. And I don't want to deal with it. I want to go to the next job and make some more money. I don't want to have to work.
Exactly. And my take is I'm the same way. I don't do any repair. And I tell them, you know, building codes and regulations from town to town. I'm not a licensed contractor, you know. I state that up front, and they know that they have to do the repair once I leave. The other thing, let me throw in about trap outs. If you have a swarm that you know has moved into a building, you know, within a week, and you put a trap out, the trap out usually you can get the trap out done in a week. So sometimes I will, if I have a customer that says, yeah, they just moved in yesterday or something, and, you know, I don't feel like doing a cut, you know, ripping open the stuff, I'll just go install a trap out, and usually within a week, they'll abscond.
Usually in 2 days, it's done. If they've been in there less than a week, and usually in 2 days, it's done.
Yeah.
I've got
a question on trap out. Kelly's Bees out of Kentucky, they are advertising a a variation on the trap out where you run the bees through a tunnel. You attach the tunnel to the entrance, run through a tunnel through the nuke or hive, and you put inside the hive your brood. Has anyone used that technique that without using the comb, that you'll move them queen and all? You know, on a standard trap out, you're not going to get the queen, but with this one, they say the queen will actually move.
I find that hard to believe. That queen ain't going to leave that brood that's in the house.
No, I've tried, but I have never had a queen move.
That's a closed system, basically. It's just a pipe running out of the wall.
A closed system, basically making an extension of their existing hive chamber.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like moving her into a deep, you know, moving her from a deep up top to a deep down below.
Now, she won't even go through. If you put an inch cover between two dips, she's not even going to move up. So she's not going to come through a pipe to go to another extension of a hive. I don't see it working very well.
Yeah. Well, I saw it and it had me wondering, and I kind of questioned whether she'd move or not.
Well, you know, look at it. This is what I explain to people when I do studies and research for universities and such. Some things you can't overthink. Humans, along the lines, humans got to believe that because we learn mathematics and we can wipe our butt with one hand and smoke a cigarette with the other, that we're smarter than anything else walking or flying on the earth, and that's not the case. And I tell people, especially one of our big competitors for our industry, as far as myself and Leon goes here in Oklahoma, is hobby beekeepers advertising trap out services when they guarantee they can get the queen. You can't guarantee you're going to get the queen. That's like, okay, imagine if you will, your wife just gave birth to your child, and you ask her to give that child up, and she can have all of them in the nursery. She just moves out of her birthing room and goes in there in the nursery. She can have, okay, those aren't her children. She gave birth to that baby. She ain't going to give that baby up.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with a queen. She has got one purpose, and that's to lay them eggs and raise them. And she is not going to leave what she has established and what she has as familiar unless she's forced to. And if you're doing a trap out, you're not forcing her to leave. She's not going to walk out.
No, that leads to another question. What about Be Quick or Bego? Has anyone been able to push her with that?
I've tried that on a tree, and it was a disaster. She would not come out. I mean, you get some of the bees coming out, but it's next to impossible to get her to leave brood. That's why the trap out, you know, you got to wait for the brood, for her to start laying, and then for the brood to hatch, and then finally her and what's left will abscond. Your best bet of getting a queen on a trap out is to have a swarm trap, quarter of a mile or a mile away, and you might get her. A couple times I've been able to do that, but I mean, they basically you're starving her out. They think there's no food in the area. When they abscond, they're not going to look for a nest, you know, 2 feet away. They know there's no food in the area. They're going.
I want to comment on that. If the first and foremost thing in this is being professional, and I'm going to tell you, if you go into a house and you spray some of that Bego on somebody's wall and you leave that smell there, you're not going to have a happy customer.
Yeah, I know.
So I would leave the Bego for robbing the bees. Because that stuff stinks now.
Yeah,
you aren't wrong. I didn't know what that stuff was in the back of the truck until I got out there with Leon. He told me that's what it was for. Jesus Christ!
It's one of my grandkids got a hold of one and said, well, I don't have to say much more. They got a hold of them and started spraying the other grandkids. I got in trouble over it, but I mean, you don't want to squirt that stuff in a wall. I guarantee you
That's the only thing I can think of on the current market you can guarantee somebody you can mask skunk odor with. You guarantee them. You walk in and guarantee them. So I've got some stuff right here. I guarantee you won't smell that skunk no more. Sign this release waiver. All right? And either if they, first of all, they're not going to stay in the house. But if they did, they wouldn't smell the skunk spray no more. Chances are they're not going to stay. They're going to move to another country, and then they're not going to smell it. Either way, you guarantee, you know, you fulfilled your guarantee. That has got to be some, I can't imagine anything worse smelling than that stuff.
Is it
an eviction fluid? Eviction spray? Something like that?
I think, what's that stuff I've got called, Leon? It came in all that stuff I bought. What's it, Hive Robber or something like that?
It's probably, Bego or, there's, what's, what all?
There's a honey robber. Fisher Bee Quick is supposedly not as noxious.
This stuff,
The stuff I'm talking about smells like dog crap.
It's nasty stuff.
The stuff I'm talking about, I think, is going to do to the same thing to you that hydrogen sulfide gas will. It just take, you know, a couple more seconds of exposure. This stuff, and I mean, it literally, it takes your breath.
But my question is, what is it designed to do? Is it designed to make the bees leave, makes them want to leave, and it clears them out?
No, it just makes...
The bee goes?
No,
it's used for robbing the hives. It forces them down out of the honey supers so that you can take the supers off the hive.
Right, right. That's what the bee goes for. It's to rob hives. It's not to use. You don't want to carry, if you're working bees on the public, don't even carry that stuff in your pickup.
Oh, no.
Okay. It's not a bee removal. It's for beekeepers. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. It's for beekeepers. I had a neighbor that has since moved. He still owns the house next door and it's rented out, but he has since moved to Kansas. And he told me that he was kind of undecided until he smelled that stuff. I had it on the side of the house, and I guess the neighborhood kids got into it. And that helped him decide on the move. He made his mind up if I was going to have that stuff where kids did. He wasn't going to stay. So he did. He packed up and moved. And he rents the house out to somebody else, but he wasn't staying around it.
Man.
It's for robbing honey supers.
I get you. I got another question about the vacuum removal. Do you you take the comb the same day?
Yeah. Did somebody give me that website on that that guy that had the vac? I want to look at it while I'm on here.
Yeah.
I got on here late.
Leon?
Yeah.
I'll send it to you in email right now.
Okay.
Yeah, if we're gonna do our company policy, if we can get to it to do a vacuum, you don't leave that comb in the wall if at all possible. You just
right.
Don't do it. That's asking for a bunch of problems.
Yeah.
You know, it'll rot, it'll melt, it'll leak, it'll draw ants, it'll draw robber bees.
A small hive beetle, it'll be gone in no time.
I had a job sold. I did the bee removal, and I had the comb removal sold, and the guy called me back about 2 days before I was to go out there and take the comb, and I guess he thought he was going to do it himself. I don't know. When you do that, you do a vacuum or even a lockout or one-way kind of thing. Do you guarantee against no bees being left, you know, that might fly out into the building, into the house?
You can't make a guarantee like that because you're going to have bees in the field when you're doing it that are out foraging. I mean, I usually tell the customers, you know, you're going to get some bees, maybe 50 to 100, you know, coming back at the end of the day. But, if you're making a guarantee that there's no bees, you're going to lose out on that one.
Right. So you might get bees actually inside the house.
Yeah, you could. And, the thing about it is those bees, and I tell people all the time, okay, wildlife, regardless of what species it is, once it gains access to a structure, has intimate knowledge of that structure that you'll never have. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us in our industry, when we go into an attic, for instance, We'll turn out, we'll black out the attic, turn out all the lights, turn the flashlight off to see where ambient light's protruding through so we'll know what to seal up. But those honeybees, man, I've had them come through 3/16 of an inch gap. There is no way light is coming through it. But those honeybees did.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's just something we tell them. You may have honeybees come out and come into your living structure, get a fly swatter, get some spray. You know, at that point, we have removed the comb, removed the hive to the point where if they were outside, first, they probably wouldn't survive. And if they did get accepted by another hive somewhere, you know, great. And if they don't, they're just going to die anyway. So, you know, it's not going to collapse the colony we removed or be detrimental to lose 100 bees when you're taking 20, 30,000 out.
Yeah.
But okay. It's what we tell people. We have a 5-year guarantee on honeybee removal. That's from honeybees getting back in from the outside.
Yeah.
They got nothing to do with honeybees that might come through a vaulted ceiling light or something like that.
Well, Reg, expound on that. The filling of the void, the caulking and sealing the exterior, what all goes into a good honeybee exclusion?
Oh, I learned that from Leon. You seal that house up tighter than an igloo cooler, and we do. If it measures an eighth of an inch or larger, we'll seal it. And we use paintable 100% silicone because it's got the longest weathering life. It's got about a 30-year life on it. And we do. I mean, we seal everything. We seal everything from the open spots that are inadvertently left in the ridge vents where bees can get into, all the way down to the foundation. We seal it. It looks like a brick caulk house when we walk away from it until the caulking dries. But I can guarantee you, you know, it's I learned that from Leon. Leon said, when you approach it, you're going to seal a house up for honeybees. You seal it up. You don't seal it for honeybees. You seal it so air can't get back in.
Mm-hmm.
And that honeybees, you know, and I showed one of the guys, he didn't believe that we had to seal. One of the new guys that I was training this past year on a house we removed honeybees on, he didn't believe you had to seal everything up like I told him he was going to. And after arguing with him and finally convincing him to listen to me or get off my job site, he listened and I showed him. I said, okay, and the seal, I said, you seal this as far as you want to seal it and you think it's good. So he sealed it up. He sealed it up about 20 or 30 feet down from where they were getting in. And I said, and we've got all the bees out, right? And he said, yeah. I said, okay, we got all the comb out. And we scraped and cleaned the void, and we sealed the void, and we put everything back together and sealed it as we closed. He said, yeah. I said, okay, go on the other side of the house. We went on the other side. I'd been watching them. Went on the other side of the house about 40 feet, 40, 50 feet away, and there was a clump of bees that were gathering up, starting to find their way back in. And they'll go. Man, those bees know that house. And if you don't seal it up all the way around, you only seal the face where they were getting in, they'll go to the back of the house and get in. They know how to get to the hive. So that's just us and our policy, and we base that off of what Leon taught us to do with, because I didn't get into this with beekeeping. I got into it with other animals and stuff. Leon got into beekeeping, told me about it, and said that there was money to be made if it's done right. And you know, you listen to somebody that's going to teach you right. Leon, I've been blessed to have Leon just up the road, and there ain't a thing he's ever told me that has been wrong. He's been in this game a long time. But there's good money in it if it's done right, and there's even more money in it lost if it's done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only do you have to, you know, if you go in and you half-ass something and do something shoddy, not only do you face lawsuits, you're out time, you're out money, a lot of times you're going to have to replace the repair work with money out of your pocket. If it goes to court, you'll have to pay restitution. The name smearing will go forever. You know, and it's not something you don't go try to figure out if you can, you know, you don't use somebody's house as an experiment to figure out if this is something you want to get into or not. You go with somebody that has knowledge that's a valuable asset for information that has a good standing name in the community for doing what they do. Don't use nobody's house as an experiment to figure out if this is what you want to get into.
All right.
I got a question about the VDAC, Rob.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Do you turn the vacuum cleaner off in between when you're cutting and working and stuff like that? You just don't let it keep on running, do you?
It depends. I mean, I only go, if I'm up on the ladder doing a cutout, I'll leave it running, and you know, in between comes stuff, and then when I take a break, I'll shut it off. One thing I find is, I mean, you would that if it's a hot day, running the vac is getting air through the hive and cooling them down. And like I said, because you're going from a 2.5 inch to the, you know, 16.25 by 20, the, you know, the actual air rushing through the hive once they're in there is not harmful to them at all. So leaving it running doesn't really, you know, cause any damage to them. In fact, it does help them on the hot days.
Okay. Well, I got a question, follow-up. What aftercare, once you get these bees back to the bee yard, what's the aftercare to help them get reestablished and be a productive colony in the future?
Well, your first thing is to see if you got the queen when you did your cutout and you caged her and introduced her back in, you know, I usually let them go for a week or so before I mess with them. If you don't get the queen or don't know if you got the queen, they always say, you know, don't go right back into them, but you want to make sure that they got some eggs, and then I'll go in the next day, I'll go back and see if I can see, find her, or in a couple days to see if you can find, you know, new eggs that shows that she's in there. But once they're queen, right, depending on the time of the year, I usually just, you know, you're better to just leave them alone if there's, you know, flow and stuff going on. If you're in a drought, I mean, one of the things you do a cutout is you don't give them, you know, the honey is deadly to them when they get it all over them and sticky. So if you don't put frames of honey in there, you know, you do get some with the brood and stuff. So it's not like they're going to starve, you know, overnight if you don't feed them. But if there's a flow, you could consider feeding them. But other than that, you're better off to, as long as they're queen right, to just, you know, leave them alone.
Do you find the need that you need to medicate them? Or treat them mites or do anything like that?
I don't treat or medicate any of my bees. That's one of the nice things about doing cutouts. I mean, that's how I actually get involved in the cutouts. My effort has been more as a beekeeper to get feral survivor bees, because treating them, you know, I was spending a ton of money on medication, and, you know, you could flip a coin whether they're going to make it through the winter or not. So my whole getting involved in doing removals was to get some feral survivor stock that you know, that was strong stuff that, you know, that didn't need me taking care of them.
I'm kind of like Rob myself. I have a naturalist approach to it. We'll take the comb. We'll have the bees on new frames and foundations, and we'll take the comb and just lay the comb out, unless it's brood. If it's brood, we'll put those in open frames. But the honey, we'll just lay it out in front of the hive, let them clean up what they want to clean up if they need food. But as far as the medicating and stuff goes, we won't do it. I'm not a doctor. There's so much that science still doesn't know about bees. They can't explain colony collapse disorder. Who are they to say that bees need to be medicated? You know, it's you're talking about a species that's been in existence since, they say, the beginning of time. I know there's documented proof and evidence that the Egyptians used honeybees. And they said, you know, the Egyptians didn't medicate them. So why should I? You know, those bees know better how to take care of themselves than I'm ever going to know.
Uh, I mean, depending on where you are, and it's not necessarily medicating. I mean, if you're down south and small hive beetles are an issue, you know, you might have to do some kind of traps or something on the hive beetles. But here in New York, the winters, you know, are cold enough that it does damage, pretty good damage to the hive beetles. So although we do have them now, thanks to you know, the commercial beekeepers that are migrating all around, unless you got a really weak hive, it's really not an issue for me per se. If I get a weak, you know, if I'm making queens or I get a nuke that's, you know, I forgot about, and you know, the queen's not a good queen or whatever, you know, you can lose them to small hive beetles. But other than that, you know, regular hives that are productive, I don't have issues with small hive beetles. But you know, the South, you don't get the luxury of those those killer winters that kill small hive beetles and bees. So you might have to do something with that. But as far as, you know, antibiotics and, you know, and stuff for bites, I don't treat at all.
So they get back on their feet fairly well on their own.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like a normal beehive. You know, if you can, the more you leave them alone, the better off they're going to be.
Okay. Unless you're Leon, what he needs to do is pour diesel on all the trees for about 20 miles of his house, because his hives swarm and go up into the same tree, look like a broom handle growing up out of the ground now. Leon, do you still have a branch on that tree?
No, I had that gum thing swarm about four times in 1 year.
I know the last time I was out at your house, you had that ladder leaned up against it just waiting for him to do it to that last branch.
Well, I got tired of sticking it up there, so I just started leaving it up there. But that was my fault. That was just one of those hives. If you keep bees something to do, they won't swarm as bad. And that was just my. I keep a hive just for like when I get a swarm where I can pull brood out. You know, you call it a long hive, and I keep a hive just for that, not to make honey, but just to pull brood out and start a new hive or make splits or whatever. And I just wasn't keeping them something to do, and that's why they start swarming, but I got some good hives out of it.
You know, I may be getting these beehives, et cetera, and, you know, I'm not a beekeeper. Don't know if I want to get into beekeeping. Would a beekeeper be interested in these wild bees?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're best.
I've already broached that subject with local bee clubs here, and absolutely. They're beekeepers that want them.
I had a guy here who I have some old medium and large boxes out in front of the house, on the side of the house that I need to pick up. I just haven't. But I had a guy here that was a hobby beekeeper. They drove by and saw that stuff laying out and stopped, come up, knocked on the door. He actually told me, he goes, "I'm a hobby keeper. I'll give you $200 a hive if you want to get rid of them." And I said, "Well, there's nothing in those." He goes, "Well, if you have any you want to get rid of." And I said, "Well, what do you consider a hive?" He goes, "Well, you know, a super and a brood." I said, "Do what?" He goes, "You know, a super and a brood is what I consider a hive. If you got, you know, you want to get rid of them, I'll give you $200 a piece for them." That's how bad he was wanting them. He's a hobby keeper. So I know, you know, I know the market is there for the hobby keepers that want to get in. A lot of the master keepers and the people that are into it for honey production, a lot of those will grow their own and cultivate their own, so on and so forth. But the hobby keepers are the ones that that'll really pay the money for it.
Did you price the 3-pound package lately? Anywhere from $75 to $90 for a 3-pound package of bees.
Jeez.
I had heard that the beekeepers don't want wild bees because they could introduce disease or mites into their colonies.
Well, I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, the fact is the bees that you were harvesting especially commercial beekeepers, because a lot of the commercial beekeepers don't have time to, you know, they're not going to go out and chase a swarm that comes out of their hive. They're too busy pollinating or moving from, you know, place to place. So mm-hmm. most of the stuff that you guys are harvesting comes from the commercial beekeepers.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's another thing too. Any beekeeper tells you that he doesn't want your bees because they were, you know, wild or feral, whatever it may be, and he's raising his own, and he doesn't want the introduction of mice or whatever. He doesn't know what he's doing. Okay, you can have one robber bee with a mite on it come out of nowhere, and land, if it makes a landing on that hive, transfer that mite. I mean, it's as simple as that. You're either going to have them and you're going to battle them, or you're not going to have them.
And what will keep the guy from bringing in these ferals, and if he don't like them after a season, he requeens and he's right back to what he had?
Just time. Time. You know, the more ferals they have to keep up with and get and maintain and look and see if they're going to be productive and this, that, and the other, the less time they have to get their hives to a crop and pollinate and get bait.
Yeah, and they're not going to want to pay you for a hive when they can just make a split from their own hive for, you know, basically the price of a queen. So there is a strong market out there, but, you know, I forget who somebody said, but, you know, find a local club and stuff, and there'll be a list of people, especially, you know, they're local bees. I don't know where you're at, but I know up here in the north, people want local bees. They don't want bees from the south because they're not, you know, winter hardy, and you want bees that are acclimated to your area. They're untreated. The comb that they're on was untreated. We have a lot of people that are, you know, not to be discouraged, just to put them down, but what I consider a tree hugger or something, that are all natural, and they don't want, you know, anything to do with foundation because of the chemicals in that. There's definitely a market out there. I get people all the time wanting to buy the bees, but, you know, like I said, I'm in it for myself to get that feral stock, so I'm not interested in selling them.
Yeah, the hobby, like I said a while ago, from what I've seen here in the Tulsa area anyway, the hobby beekeepers are the ones that are real apt to make purchases like that, because they're trying to get into it and build, you know, and they've got it in their head that Rome was built in a day, and they can build, you know, corporate-level pollination hives in the same amount of time. So they'll buy anything they can come across, anything. But the actual full-time keepers that we have down here, I've talked to a few of them and asked them if, you know, they would be interested, and every one of them's told me no. Every one of them's also said, go ask God. Find a hobby keeper. They're the ones that want them. But like I said, that's here in the Tulsa area.
Well, let me ask a question throughout as far as nuisance wildlife. You take a colony out of a house. The customer really wanted them out alive. They really want to do the good thing for the bees. They want bees in their yard. Does anyone offer that service? You know, set up a hive in the back corner of their yard where it's away from their kids. Does anyone offer that?
I've actually done a few removals where the people wanted to keep the bees, and I set them up with a hive and stuff, and they're, you know, they're tickled pink with them now.
Yeah.
Do you offer services to come out and manage that hive, or do they, you teach them and they take over?
Both. I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of the clients I have is, you know, a wealthy client. And they, I mean, it's actually an hour and a half away from me. I didn't even want to do the job to start with. And, you know, they were insistent, no, we want, you know, and you're the only one we can find. So I go up there, you know, this first couple of years, I've been, you know, going up there probably 2-3 times a year to check on things and, you know, teaching them. Hopefully, you know, at some point I won't need to be doing that anymore, but, you know, they were totally knew nothing. So, you know, I had to explain everything to them.
We've got a client that's like that also, and I told him right up front. I said, listen, I know how to remove them. I know how to get them out. I know how to close it, seal it back up where they can't ever get back in. I know how to put them in a hive, and I know how to eat honey, And that's about the extent of it. I'm not a beekeeper. And they said, well, you know, we need you to monitor. I said, I can't monitor nothing. The hives that I have, the bees take care of themselves. I don't do anything. They know better what to do for themselves than I do. I just go steal their honey. You know, come out here every once in a while and take a look and see if they're producing or not producing or whatever. Well, okay, it's this month, this much a month for me to come out here. And I do. I go out there and once a month, and I'll look at the hive and go, yep, they're still making brood, making honey. And here this next spring, they're going to have to add another body or another hive because they're going to, you know, they're going to split and swarm. But that's,
well,
you know.
I guess in that case, you sold them an exclusion too, didn't you?
Yeah, I told them it's, you know, it's, you don't make no mistake about it. I'm not a beekeeper. You know, I said, well, they said, well, how do you get honey? I said, I use what's called a crush method, slap method. They said, well, what's that? I said, I crush out what I can and then slap the frame on it, everything else, and get that. That's how I get it out. And then I strain it. I said, I'm not geared for all that stuff. I'm not a keeper. And they said, well, you know, it's a test of your warranty. Look at it that way. You come back out and monitor your work, and then just look at the hive and see if it's doing anything. All right. So you'll get people like that. That, you know, if you just be honest with them. If you don't know how to keep bees, tell them. I can get them out, and I can keep them out, and I can eat honey. That's about the extent of it. They'll still go, well, come out here and look at them, see if they're producing. Well, you know, if you start off with, it's real easy. If you start off with empty frames on your super, and then, you know, 6 months down the road, all of them are full, and it's time to change them out. The chances are they're producing, so change them out.
How many hives you got now, Ridge?
Oh, I don't even know. I've got two in front of the house. I need to get out on the property. I haven't looked. I just put them in hives and throw them out there.
That's been my greatest fear about getting back into beekeeping, is getting too many.
I don't know what's going to happen when I get, you know, like you big timers get, have several hundred of them, and I've got several hundred different names on them, and I've got to go and jar up several hundred jars of honey for past clients, and end up spending more time jarring previous clients' honey than I will be doing the I have to hire a guy just to go jar stuff.
I don't know, Reg. You might be chasing your own swarms if you ain't paying attention to all of them.
I don't chase.
These swarms will be all over town.
Job security.
They can go out there to Leon's.
Yeah.
That suit me. If there was a way to, you know, homing bees, that's what I'm looking to train them. Homing bees and racing bees, like they do with the pigeons. And then teach them to stay at Leon's. Because I'll be honest, I'm into it, personally speaking, I'm into it for wildlife removal. I'm originally a trapper, fur trapper. And that's where I got my start, like the majority of our industry. The honeybee removal I got into because there's money to be made if it's done right. The beekeeping, I don't know the first thing about it. I mean, honestly, don't know the first thing about it. I put this box on top of that box, and they'll build what they want to. I've had broods built in supers, and I've had honey put in brood boxes, and I don't know anything about keeping them separated or screening off or queen excluders or any of that other stuff. I just put the boxes together with foundations. That's about the extent of it. So,
that's my best way, though.
They're getting
to do what they're going to do.
Well, that falls back on my belief that they know better what they're doing than I know. So they take care of themselves.
Well, I've got Craig on here. Craig, how you doing this evening?
Oh, pretty good. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I was mute challenged.
Hey, you had put a video up on removals when we first announced we're going to do this podcast. You got anything you want to add on tonight about removals?
Well, I don't have near as much experience as these guys, and I was actually just having a good time listening to them talk about it.
yeah, me too.
I've done some swarm captures and just some, you know, really, really basic trap outs, but I haven't cut into anybody's wall yet, although I do have a sawzall, and I have a basic contract written up to where, you know, when the opportunity presents itself, then I'll get into doing that, but I haven't done it yet.
Hey, don't use that sawzall unless you absolutely have to.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What would you use instead? Just a circular saw and?
Nope. I use a hammer and a pry bar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is because those bees have an uncanny knack of knowing somebody like you is going to come along with a sawzall, so they will build their hive right around some 110 or 220 electrical wire that's only be the only wire on that side of the house or structure, and you cut right through it.
Here in the Northeast, you got plumbing run through the walls, so the heat ducts, and you cut right through the plumbing pipe, and you have a flood.
Yeah, that's a hole.
Yeah, you want to do a challenging cutout. I did one that was above an electrical, the circuit breaker box. What a fiasco. Mm. You know, it was built all around the wires. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, there's also, for those that couldn't make it to the NACOA National Convention in New Orleans, sure wish y'all could have made it. But in our industry, hobby or not, as of April 2010, if you cut 6 square feet out of a house, and it's real easy to get 6 square feet. If you cut 6 square feet out of a house that was built before 1978, you have to be asbestos and lead certified by OSHA and the EPA.
Mm-hmm. Looking
if it was built
here,
if it was built after 78 and before 94, I believe you don't need the lead requirement, but you still have to have the asbestos requirement.
Trap outs are sounding better and better, but I guess a lot of people aren't willing to wait for that.
Well
here's a tip. I don't know, y'all may know this one, but I've used to kind of delineate the boundaries of the comb if I'm dealing with sheetrock. Coat hanger, straightened out, sharpened on one end, will poke through sheetrock, and you can feel when it hits the wax. And you can kind of get the boundaries of it before you ever cut the first sheetrock.
Yeah. And even the modern sheetrock, the presenter told us, even the modern sheetrock, if it's made in America, it is not going to be asbestos lined. The problem is everything you're going to buy off the shelf right now is surplus purchase from China and overseas because of the Katrina disaster. And that is going to be a minimum of 12% asbestos.
Don't you guys use an infrared temperature gauge shooter?
Temperature gauge works too.
Yeah, I know, just to shoot a gun, shoot a ray type thing, just a heat gun.
I use an infrared camera.
Use an infrared gun, Mikey. I use it for it to test heat of exhaust system. I'm a mechanic by trade, diesel mechanic. And I guess the infrared sheet gun, what you call a gun, it costs maybe $100. You can get one cheap one for maybe a little less than $100. I paid like $300 for mine. Mine's a little better than the average person's. You know, it just reads the temperature. I can trace a colony right out, no problem, anywhere they are. By temperature
variation. Yeah. Mine's probably a little more advanced. I paid about $3,000 for mine. It come from Progress Thermal.
Basically, you're going like a fireman, Scott.
Yeah.
I have used those before if I had access to them if I want them, but it's kind of hard to get it sometimes at the fire department.
You guys talking about just pointing that at the outside of the structure and looking for slight temperature differences? Or
exactly right.
No.
You do it inside, too.
Inside?
Yeah.
Temperature differences. You can buy them from I think we announced. I'll think of it in a minute. With the Northern Hydraulic has them. They have them real cheap, $75 or so. Cheap one. Basically, it's just a little handheld gun. The closer you get, the more accurate it is. I mean, I'm talking like 18 inches or 2 feet away. Just, you know, they have an infrared light on them. You shoot the thing, it's battery operated, you shoot it, it goes around. Even Milwaukee has them now. I don't know what Milwaukee ones cost.
Fluke has one that's about $8,000. I got mine from Progress Thermal. It's about $3,000. They do have some cheaper ones on the market that are gun designed. Got a pistol grip on them. Be careful. If your client's neighbors don't know you're there, they're going to wonder what you're pointing a gun at, and then the police will show up.
I've had the police show up when I've been out doing things because they think you're part of a hazmat team because I'm wearing a white suit with a mask.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Oh, have you had that happen on NBLs? Have that happen or not? Other DPs must have had that happen to them.
Yeah, when you use a Tyvek suit or something and, you know, you happen to walk outside before you strip off, they tend to wonder what's going on, especially when you've got it on and a half-face or full-face respirator with two big old filters hanging off of it. And they think there's a little bit more than wildlife problems there at that point. I've seen clients call their kids inside and jump in their car and take off leaving when we walk out with the Tyvek suit on.
That's like, I work a mechanic for a town, a municipality. We're kind of out in the woods here, about 65 miles out of Boston, basically. And you get these newcomers come down here and they say, this is during deer season. There's a guy carrying shotguns down the street during deer season. The newbies or whatever you want to call them come from the city to come out here because it's cheaper. Real estate's cheaper. Everything's cheaper. And they get all whatever concerned about people carrying shotguns down the street during deer season.
But for those that are, you know, that are looking to get into it or wondering how they need to get into it and what equipment they're going to use, Rob, you said your system was about $70.
Yeah, I've been getting $75, but that doesn't, you know, you got to supply your own vac and stuff for it. It's the modifications to adapt it to the hive bodies.
Yeah, but even still, just starting out, it's if you've already got hive bodies and stuff and you're looking to get a vacuum, like I said, I use the Owens. I'm fixing to use Rob's. I can tell you that now.
Yeah. Hey, Rob? Rob?
Yeah.
How many you got in stock?
I have 20 coming in 2 weeks.
Okay, good. I'm going to order one.
I would strongly recommend, whether it's Rob's or anybody's, for you to get a, you know, especially if you're going to do cutout, save yourself some time and heartache, go ahead and get a BVAC. If you want to save yourself 2 hours of transfer, hassle, and cleanup, as much as I like the Owens, I like what I've seen and heard about Rob's even more. So that would be the way to go. That's the way I'm fixing to go, but you can't do this. You can't do it and be efficient without a BVAC. You can't do it. I thought I could. The first one I saw Leon had out there at his house, I didn't recognize it. That's how illiterate I am with beekeeping. I even had to ask Leon what it was, and he said it was his new BVAC that he was putting together. I think it was sitting on your kitchen table, Leon.
It might have been. I've got two of them. I don't remember which one it was.
Looked like it was hooked to a little bitty nuke box, if I remember correctly. But yeah, it's. I don't know where Leon and the rest of the guys stand. Personally speaking, I couldn't. You know, hindsight's 20/20. If I'd have known 10, 15, 20 years ago what I know today, I'd have started out with a BVAC and looked to improve it myself. but since I didn't, you know, I just went ahead and purchased the BVAC and always looking for the more efficient method in anything we do, and Rob's certainly provided that for us. Now, a lot of people look at Rob's and go, well, I can do that. I can build that myself. Here's the principle. Yeah, you can. Me? I'm lazy. I'm too busy to sit and build stuff like Leon is. Just order it. Somebody else build.
I can assure anybody who takes a look at Rob's system here, you're going to find out, first of all, that Rob's an engineer. He put a lot of meticulous detail and thought into this design. He just didn't slap it together and make it happen. A lot of trial and error, right, Rob?
Yeah. I mean, I had been, after the first year I was doing removals, and, you know, all through that year, every little thing that you know, bothered me with the traditional BVAC, I checked off in my head. And when I sat down, I spent, you know, quite a bit of time working through to meet all the points that I wanted to hit. So it's worked out pretty well. I've made a few modifications since I started with the gates and stuff on it, and the regulator valves and stuff. But the design, you know, the basic design has been working well for me.
Well, and that's another thing too that brings to mind. You're an engineer, right, Rob?
Yes.
Okay. Don't anybody that's listening, don't think for 1 second that when you look at the pictures and you think you can do it yourself, that engineer, take Rob's name off of it, that any engineer hasn't got something in there you can't see from the pictures, that you're going to have to go through 10, 15 years of trial and error trying to figure out where you went wrong instead of just buying it.
Well,
so, I don't have time to sit and build, and I'm just going to look for our order to come into you this week or next week, Rob, because we're gonna get one before spring gets here also.
How do you want people to order these from you? Are they right off the site or what?
Yeah, I plan on putting a on my site. I plan, once I get them in and have them available, I plan on doing it through my site. I have been, like I said, all the information's out there now. I've been reluctant to put anything out there when I didn't have them, but now that I've made arrangements to get some, I'll start selling them off the site. Yeah.
Now, is that going to be the cost plus the shipping?
Yeah, I've been getting 75 plus shipping.
Okay.
And I haven't got that quite figured out. I mean, the few I've sold, it's the weight and stuff. The few that I've sold to this point that I've built for people, I've, you know, cut cardboard boxes, stuff to fit. Now that I got them, you know, I'm going to get the right boxes so, you know, they fit in well and keep the weight down and stuff. But so I don't recall what they weigh. But if you look at my site, steps for using, the first picture, you'll see the two pieces together. And then these are older pictures before I introduced the cutout shim, but that only adds an inch. So basically, the unit is 20 by 16 and a quarter by 7 inches.
Well, you know, I got to thinking about the last job we did with the Owens compared to what we're going to do with yours. I transferred and filled up two supers. Figuring walk time, open, transfer, suck the same bees up again, clean it up, put it back together, and so on and so forth. 2 hours that day was spent just transferring bees out of the Owens. Your system alone, I could have hooked right to the supers, pulled them in, hooked to another super, pulled them in, or stacked them both together and pulled them all in one go and get it done, save 2 hours out of my day. So you're just not going to be efficient without a BVAC, and what I'd consider ours now to be a substandard.
I use my old one to do when I do hornet and wasp removals. I use my old one to suck them from the cage.
Yeah.
So the hornet ones, you just open it up and just let it rip them through?
I used the old cage in a box VVAC for that. If you look at my site, it's down at the bottom.
Okay.
It talks about.
So this will work real well with yellow jacket cartons in the ground.
Yeah, it will.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, in my experience, it does.
Some of them I've handled down here in Florida are pretty huge, though. I mean, you know, size of car and stuff.
What I did was took a piece of plate steel. 5-inch by 5-inch. And I took a hydraulic press and punched an 1.5-inch hole in it, right in the center of it. And I got an extra hose mounted to it. And I just put that down over the entrance on a ground jacket. And when you turn that on, what it don't suck out is going to come swarming out anyway when that vibration hits the ground, because they're going to be furious. And you'll get them. You'll get them in a heartbeat. But that weighted iron, you know, take a 1/4-inch or 3/8-inch plate, punch a hole in it. That's plenty of weight to hold that hose on the same spot without it bouncing or moving around. And it'll certainly suck them out of the ground.
Yeah, I'm sitting here. I didn't realize there were so much comments on this BVAC link. Yeah, everything is there. God. You just spend a little bit of time on it, just about anything you could imagine, any question you'd ask. It's all been asked. It's written. It's documented well.
It's written and documented well, but not publicized well, because none of us knew it. And you and I browsed the sites.
Well, it's not even, we've done podcasts on this before. About a year ago, wasn't it, Rob, just before you got sick?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, it's back then we didn't even think you were going to get sick. And that was back when Bob Evans would fall asleep in his chair while we were doing podcasts. Remember that? He'd sit there and look forward to doing the podcast, and he'd end up falling asleep in the middle of the podcast. I remember, you know, God rest his soul, I remember he'd fall asleep on us.
Uh-huh. He sure would. And I'm not saying it's not publicized well because of website capabilities or anything like that. When I say something's not publicized well, it's usually because Reginald Murray hadn't shot his mouth off about it yet.
Oh, no, no.
Usually when I find something that makes us more efficient, I have a tendency of telling the nation about it.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're going to probably move those 20 pieces. So you've got a third party making them for you now?
Kind of. I don't have a big volume ability yet at this point, but if things pick up, I might have to expand that. You know, it's one of those deals. My intent never was to sell them, but it's becoming to the point where I get so many people that wanting them, maybe it's the route I got to take.
Well, I remember a year ago just asking you to do this. And you were like, nah, I don't want to do that. So I was kind of surprised you went this far. That's good.
I think it's good. Otherwise, we'd be coming into this spring doing the same thing we've been doing, taking 2 extra hours of our day transferring bees from a vacuum cleaner to a hive body. Now we can just suck them right out into the hive. I remember when Kirk Beauregard came out with a 5.5 compound, he sent me one for a test trap, wanted me to field try it. And I was so impressed with it that I sent it around to a bunch of my friends. It looked like one of them old 1930s, 1940s suitcases by the time it got back to me, because everywhere it had been, they used the same box and it still had all the postmarks on it and everything. I remember Kirk wasn't supposed to release his production until the following year. And after I sent it around and a couple other guys talked about it that he had testing it, he had to release what he already had produced, and going into his release year, he was 700 dozen on back order. So if it takes off like his trap did, you might want to start looking real quickly at a third-party manufacturing company.
Yeah, well, actually, I had, I can't think of the gentleman's name, Rob, that we had on here, Jerry Freeman, who does the small hive beetle traps.
Yeah, yeah.
He had contacted me. In fact, I sent him one of the prototypes and stuff that, you know, they were interested in manufacturing them. But that's been over a year and a half ago, and he's a great guy. He just says that they're overwhelmed with their business, him and his partner, and they just haven't got around to it. So, but yeah, I mean, I might have to look for some other options.
Now, I'll tell you what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to promote it to any of my competition in the States. Leon, you can't get one either.
Leon, I have all 20 bought in the morning. You better watch it.
Yeah.
You won't even get one.
No, Leon's not. I consider him colleague and friend, but not my friend.
Well, he'll have him locally for $8.99.
Yeah, I'll call Leon up. You want to go get bees with me? And he'll go, where are they at? I said, Dallas, Fort Worth. I ain't riding this. You don't have to drive to Dallas. You just drive over here. You ride with me. I ain't going down there. So he gets invited. He refuses to go.
How far is Dallas?
About 4 hours away from here.
Oh, that's like me going to. Okay, that's like me going back home to Sarasota then, or going up to see David.
Yeah, but no, Leon tells me no because he's usually too busy.
I can make a living within 50 miles of my house, so I don't have no reason to go to Dallas.
I'm going to come into one of them, though, that he's not going to be able to pass up. One day I'm going to come into one of them. I'm just, Leon, you need to go ride with me over here. I need your expertise on it. It'll pay you five figures. I'll go, okay.
Now, that'll work.
I didn't tell him that. Before we started, I didn't tell him the decimal point was four slots up on those five figures. Just say five figures.
So that vacuum, just I was looking at it on the website. I didn't get on here. Y'all had done talked about it. It just puts it right into the hive.
Yeah, isn't it? You know, more efficient than what we're using now. We don't have to transfer. We just move
right. It just sucks them right into the hive. I noticed that looked like a plastic hive.
The pictures on there are the polystyrene hives. I do use that for mine. Well, I've actually I've gone to pretty much all polystyrene insulated hives for the wintering here, and I did build mine that way as well. The ones that I'm selling and are making are for the standard 10-frame Langstroms.
So you just get a different hive every time you go get bees, or do you?
Yeah, I mean
Do you use that same hive and just transfer the frames, or do you just get a different hive?
I take a different hive, and like I said, when I get home, I just set it on the stand, go back the next day, just pick it up, slide the real bottom board under it, take the vac piece off, and put a real cover on it.
Okay.
A whole lot easier than what we've been doing.
Yeah, probably a whole lot less dead bees, too.
Yeah. Well, I almost guarantee you a whole lot less traumatic to the colony because you're not, you know, you're only sucking them off once. You're not sucking them off and dumping them and shaking them and transferring them. And probably a higher survivability rate through his system than what we've been doing through a, you know, standard fish trap in a bucket or window screen in a box or whatever it may be. I like what I've seen, personally.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I'll make you a deal. You buy two, give me one. Before you use yours, I'll try it out.
What's the deal for him?
Then, well, I'll let him know. If I don't like it, then he won't have to waste his time. He can just go ahead and give me the second one since I store a bunch of junk here anyway.
Well, like I said, he'll probably buy all 20 and let you know that they're available locally for $8.99.
Well, I think if he bought all 20, even $89.99 would save on shipping charges. But like the old ones, you know, it's $120 plus shipping. So I understand folks got to make their money, but when, you know, you're spending a $100 bill to get an item and a $100 bill to have it shipped, that shipping's killing our industry, our, you know, manufacturers, or producers, industry members, users, consumers, shipping killing. But that's where I stand. You buy two, give me one of them, and I'll tell you whether or not it works and whether or not you wasted your money and your time. That's the best I can do right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, we certainly covered a lot of territory tonight.
I think it was a really good night.
Yeah, it's
got a lot.
It won't be long. Everybody will be a couple of months. Everybody,
well,
we get started.
They say here about Valentine's Day where I'm at, so I'll be first.
No, that won't
be long. Because of tonight's podcast,
2-3 weeks.
In 3 months, because of tonight's podcast, in 3 months we'll have 5,000 new beekeepers, and all of them with vacuums.
Do you know how many beekeepers Bob Evans created within the Wildlife Pro Network? I can name 20, 30 people right off bat.
I can remember a lot of him getting a lot of people interested.
Yeah, he got me interested. I mean, I didn't say nothing earlier at the pest control stuff, but I'd worked for a pest control company. I've been killing them for like 8 years. I've killed probably over 1,000 colonies. Never thought twice about it. Started running into some environmentally minded customers who, you know, well, you know, you sit there and you show up and you quote a kill. And, well, we're looking for somebody, to, you know, and I'm like, but I don't know anybody who does that. I finally had met Bob and finally had started trying some of those techniques with our customers and offer them for the company I work for. Now, the company I work for didn't want me to do it, and I eventually left them, because I didn't want to kill bees and I wanted to work with wildlife and stuff. But I remember actually crossing over from not wanting to kill bees anymore and wanting to go this way. And it had a lot to do with Bob. You know, we had Bob pushing all the time, you know, this is something that can be done. We don't need to kill bees. You know, all of us had the ability to do good things. He was saying in his state you didn't need a license if you were not using pesticides. But again, this goes back to, you know, I can't tell you what your state law is. Your state, you need to investigate that yourself, or whether or not what we're doing here is actually legal in your state, you know. And any local law always applies first. You know, this is an idea. This is a professional service some of you are doing. This is a professional service. I'm sure somebody after tonight is going to probably want to try it. So,
well,
I'm
Rob,
glad
that,
we had the chance to do it. Yes, go ahead.
And in that vein, let me throw this out. If you're offering a service for hire, it should be common sense to have insurance.
Sure.
I've gotten grief from making that comment in other places, but it should be common sense.
Anytime you're doing something with the public, you know, just think about it. You step onto a property, you suddenly take responsibilities for bees. What if somebody gets stung? You don't think they're going to go after the professional on the site? What if,
yeah, what if
the action,
what if,
you know?
What if, it'll be that one time you chose not to have insurance, and the person who gets stung is going to be an anaphylactic reactive child.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got to be smart. This is a business. This is not, you know, a six-pack job where you're just going out and get a little bit of extra money for the weekend. No.
Yeah, and that's one, you know, not to, I know it's not a Nucoa podcast, but that's one of the things Nucoa's implemented, is that if you're going to get the professional membership, you have to show proof of insurance in order to qualify. That's in the new policies. So you can get a supportive member or a vendor member or anything else without proof of insurance. But if you're going to get the professional, you have to show proof of insurance.
Well, Rob, did you have anything else you wanted to share with us tonight?
No, I think I'm about out.
I was going to say, I've had you on the gun for almost 2 hours, and I didn't even know we'd end up doing this podcast this way. But
that makes two of us.
Yeah, I'd have to say that you were in great form again. I was glad to have you back on a podcast. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. You're always welcome. Come back anytime. We certainly miss hearing your voice.
I will try. Be here more often.
You know, you sound a lot stronger as you went in the podcast than when you started, too. So I guess you got some adrenaline going, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Talking about something that I enjoy, and this time you know, it's good for a change to be talking about something enjoyable and other things going on in my life. So perhaps.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Personally, I'm glad to hear it because usually the only thing that gets people's adrenaline running is if I say something that offends them, which is, is all the time.
Oh, Reg, I always appreciate your honesty.
I get that a lot.
Well, I was going to say, anybody got any additional questions? Want to take this off a different direction? Should we go? We can go into the post show at this time.
Hold on, Rob. I haven't had the chance to look and everything. What forms of payment do you accept?
Currently, I accept PayPal. I don't have credit card
options.
Okay. Personal check, company check.
Yeah, for clearance, Reg. Reg, for you, yeah, that's fine.
No. I'm just, you know, for anybody. I mean, we accept a
personal check. PayPal is the most efficient, but if people don't have PayPal, I mean, I'm willing to take, you know, company check or personal check, and I'll just, personal checks I'll hold till it clears, but yeah.
Yeah, even PayPal has an e-check method where you could pay by check, and it's held, and then when the holding period's up, they transfer the money to them. So you could even pay by check through PayPal.
Yeah. Well, I know that they had some advancements. I don't use PayPal a whole lot anymore. I didn't know where they stood with them.
I have no problem with them, Reg.
Oh, I've never had a problem using PayPal. I did have a friend of mine. Let me rephrase, an ex-friend, past acquaintance, that had some crooked dealings with somebody. He purchased something off of eBay, paid for it with PayPal. He got it in. Said they never shipped it. That's what he told PayPal. And without question, PayPal removed the funds that he had sent to them straight out of their bank account and refunded his money. So I know that was going on in the past. And a lot of people were leery about that because of it.
I've used PayPal since the mid-90s. I've never had a bad experience. In fact, most of the business I do with people is by PayPal. I'm not afraid of it, Reg.
Well, I'm not afraid of it either, but I know some folks are.
They're a bank. They're going to follow American banking rules. They're a bank in California. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not a website. They're a bank. I remember having to tell my mom that one day. I don't know. That's a weird internet thing. I said, Mom, it's a bank in California. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the post show. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Rob, it's been a pleasure having you here. I really looking forward to having you come back someday and telling us you're through this chronic Lyme disease. I mean, that's a tragic thing that you're going through, and my heart's with you, as well as my prayers. And with that, I'd like to say thank you, God bless, and good night. Let's go to the post show.